Welcome back to Toys on Tap. This week is an incredible week with Draculaser coming on the podcast, telling us all about his life, starting his side project of the ambient tones and stuff that he's doing while he's touring the world, and his love for Japanese Sifubi. You're not going to want to miss this week, because you also get to hear about the events that he will be at this year so that you can meet him in person. And let me tell you, it's a pleasure. If you want more Toys on Tap, you can like, follow, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. Honestly, it helps us a lot, and it's free for you. It's absolutely free, and it gets this podcast into more people's ears and eyes now that we are on YouTube. If you want to support the show and follow along even more, you can jump on all social medias at Toys on Tap. I say all socials, but it's really just the ones we use, which I think is just Instagram and Facebook. And lastly, if you want to support the show even more, you can jump on Patreon, patreon.com/toysontap. That's where you get this episode early, and it goes on there, and then it goes on YouTube, and then it goes to where you get podcasts. So that's one plus, and we're still working out details of what is coming next. Toys on Tap is going to be tabling a lot this year. We just finished up at Indie Toy LA. We will also be at Collected Con. We will also be at Designer Con Summer in Pasadena. We will also be at Designer Con in Vegas in November. And if there's other shows that pop up along the way, we're probably going to be there. We have some cool projects. We're working with some incredible artists this year. Depressed Monster is one of them. Ihimo Adventures is another one. I work a lot with More Horrific, and so some of the toys might be coming from him. And so we're just really excited about some of the big things that we've got going on. And lastly, the Snailians project is moving forward, so we're really excited about that. Now let's get to this week's episode of Toys on Tap.
Dude, I'm pumped. I think I saw you and maybe met you at SummerSlime.
Yeah, I think in like amidst all the chaos.
And which then immediately added you to our list of interviews that we absolutely needed to get to.
Hell yeah.
And you've been a traveling guy for far too long. And I'm so pumped to get you on and talk through all this stuff. So welcome to Toys on Tap.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Just like we start every episode, please introduce yourself. Tell us who you are and what you do.
My name is Michael Scottum, also known as Draculaser on the internet. I make toys, drawings, paintings, a bunch of stuff, just weirdo, extraordinaire.
Dude, I spend the better part of, the time prepping for each interview, like scrolling back.
Yeah.
And you've been making soft vinyl toys for quite a while.
Yeah,
and it's been a minute. I want to talk through that. I want to talk through how we came up with the name Draculaser. I want to talk about why toy. I want to talk about so much stuff and your world travels and all that stuff. So let's start at the beginning. Tell me, if you're this guy that likes toys and making toys, that means the toys you had impacted you as a kid. So tell me about those things and what that was like.
Yeah, I mean... I'm trying to think like the best way to start. I have an older brother. He's like 7 years older than I am. So he's like the generation of Transformers, G.I. Joe, Ninja Turtles and all that. So I got like hand-me-downs from that era. And then as I got older, it was just Toy Biz, Marvel stuff, X-Men, Spider-Man, like all the classics, Street Sharks, Battle Trolls, Creepy Crawlers, you name it. Kind of just like whatever was weird I was into. And then as I got older, like kept collecting like Spawn, McFarlane stuff. And I think it was like 2003 or 2004, like the Kid Robot boom of urban vinyl platform toys, kind of like trying to inch into that zone. But the way Kid Robot reached out, I was really young when it started. I was like, oh, if I can just get a Dunny or a Key, like that would be the end. And I was like, that never happened, obviously. I think like 2005, I got my first like Japanese soft vinyl toy. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of just went spiraling from there. Like I wanted to collect that. I was broke in college, going to Comic-Con and spending all my money just to get there and maybe buy a single thing, something like that. And I had a substantial collection, and the apartment I was renting, we threw a crazy party and a bunch of stuff flooded, and our landlord was mad. So I sold nearly everything I had just to pay for that.
That's heartbreaking enough, right? Like, that's too much. Tell me, like, if we
Yeah.
can pause there.
Yeah.
2005, you get your first Japanese soft vinyl.
Yeah.
How do you, first, the fact that you remember the year means that was huge for you.
Oh, yeah.
So, how did you come across that? Like, is it someone that imported it? You were in Japan. What happened?
So my dad was in the Air Force, and he used to bring me, my dad's a big like model collector, toy
Yeah.
train guy, so my whole existence spawned from that, with like painting Warhammer miniatures with him when I was really little. My brother liked models, but I kind of gravitated towards Gundam and robots and stuff like that. But he would bring me back like Hobby Japan magazine, so you see page after page of like the weirdest stuff that I had no relationship to. I just thought it looked cool. But in terms of me finding something, my first figure to buy was like Sony, I think, was doing blind box toys called like Vanimal, or I forget. It was like Sony Capsule, whatever, but like
Yeah.
Dahara did stuff. There was like the Tim Biscup stuff. And I had gotten like a Dahara pig that was soft vinyl. And at the time, like Frank Kozik was doing the Kaiju for Grown Up stuff. And I had gotten one of his like squid things or something like that.
Yeah.
And then like seeing how it was made and how tactile it was, is just like going from a modern toy based off of older stuff to be like, oh, I like the older stuff more, and then just kind of traveling back in time through that.
I mean, something about that first toy for you just sparked something. And then
Oh, yeah.
getting a massive collection. Tell me about this house party. I've never had a house party that flooded. So,
I went to school in Richmond, Virginia, and
yeah.
lived in a three-story house with four other guys. It was super cheap, like a shitty house, and there was a bathroom on the bottom floor, the second floor, and the third floor. And like the third floor was off limits; no one needed to go up there. Someone ended up going to the third-story bathroom, blew up the bathroom, and just, I guess, something leaked. And behind our apartment was a one-bedroom apartment in the back. And so whatever gray water was just like leaking into the back apartment. Our landlord showed up to the party at like 1 in the morning. All hell broke loose. And it was just, I don't even remember. It was like $6,000 in damages that we all had to pay for. But like, as a 20-year-old kid, like that was catastrophic.
Yeah, I mean, and then you have all these this collection, and you're having to part with it. I'm assuming you've spent your time now on this side of it, recollecting some of those things.
Yeah, here and there, like,
Yeah.
as you know, I'm sure, like, you start collecting in one capacity, and you kind of, you're buying everything you can get your hands on, and then you realize you like something else, or you like an aspect from here to there, and you kind of, you either sell or just stop buying from a certain maker or whatever, and then focus on the other thing. So at the time, like, the stuff that I sold was a lot of, like modern reproduction, Bullmark, Marmot, and stuff like that. And like stuff that's not hard to find now, but something I don't really seek out to like need or validate what I'm collecting now. But the more I think about it, it's like I don't really know what I had at that time either, because that was like 16, 17 years ago at this point. So it's like, whatever, let bygones be bygones. It's just stuff.
Yeah, it's really good to know that I could sell, if something catastrophic happens, sell toys and recoup that stuff. As a side note, we just had a water thing yesterday, so holy moly. With all that, I mean, do you go to school? Because your style is so unique when it comes to making soft vinyl. Your style is so unique with the headers and stuff. And so tell me about art and how this kind of plays out in your life.
I went to school for printmaking. I wanted to be a professional screen printer in some capacity
Is that a
of,
real job?
sure, maybe now not so much, but I just wanted to make like prints for people or
Yeah.
open up a print shop and do t-shirts or whatever, just kind of like do stuff with my hands. But when I graduated, I joined a band and toured the world for a couple years, and that wasn't for me, and then came back and had to figure out like what's going on. So I kind of just leaned into freelance illustration and design work for other people with odd jobs here and there just to pay the bills and maybe like buy a toy here and there. But
I don't think we can brush over the band thing. Tell me about this band. What band is this?
It was called Wild Nothing. They're still a band now. I grew up with the main guy who writes for them, and when I graduated, their drummer had quit and they needed like an emergency fill-in, so I just hopped on and played around for a while.
Toward the world.
Toured the world, yeah.
Are we talking like Europe, parts of Asia, that kind of stuff?
I did three European tours with them and a couple full US and East and West Coast stuff here and there, but I didn't tour Asia with them. I think right when I left, they did Japan and all that. And yeah, that was seems like a lifetime ago also, but they're great dudes, got nothing but good things to say about them.
Dude, that's absolutely insane to like be touring and then just like, I think I don't want to do this.
Yeah. It was at the time, I don't even know like what my goals in life were, but it was just like
Yeah.
touring 9 to 10 months a year and like coming back and barely being able to pay rent on like where I was living at the time. I was just like, I kind of want to set my roots down because I had moved a lot, like with my dad in the military, just from place to place. I kind of just wanted to have a core like community and a home base, basically.
Yeah, I mean, which, like, thankfully that started your illustration and all that stuff. I mean, starting freelance, what year is this?
2012, 2013, something like that.
Okay, so internet's great, social media is up and running, so freelance isn't as hard as it once was. Okay.
It was like that was the dawn of Instagram, basically. And I kind of was just posting art and like doing random t-shirts and group art shows and stuff like that. Like nothing too crazy, but it kind of just set the motions going forward.
Early on in, so I scroll back, right? The whole Instagram, I can go all the way to the beginning.
You went way back.
And early on, you would do this thing that, like, if I would have known about your account back then, I would have bought some of these things, right? So it's like there was a Kanayan illustration that you were like, here it is, $50 plus shipping, take it or leave, like just nonchalantly throwing stuff in there. But the fact that you did something like Kanagon means that that kind of toy or something had infiltrated you as a person. And so,
100%.
how was that like? You had gotten your first, were you fully ingratiated into this kaiju monster thing at, by this point when you're doing these illustrations?
Yeah, it was also kind of just like if I can't afford to buy the toy, like I'm just gonna draw it.
Yeah.
And it was just like I'm looking at all this stuff. I had books or magazines or whatever, and it's just like these things are cool. And I'm like any other collector beyond the 3D object. I love pieces of paper, packaging, like books, magazines. Like I'm just amassing influence and inspiration from everything that I see or like want to absorb. So it's kind of just like I see it all the time. I'm gonna draw it, or it's like stuck in my head.
Yeah. And I mean, this is 13 years ago. And then at some point in there, toys become a reality. And you get this itch and this realization that you can make toys. But at this time, it's, I mean, now, I mean, you could probably attest to this that like getting to a factory to make toys is pretty simple now.
You find someone that can sculpt, you find a factory that is willing to do whatever, but then not so much, and there was probably more gatekeeping and stuff. So tell me about that first toy. Like, how'd you even have the realization that you were going to do this?
Exactly what you said with like the lack of abundance of information or people wanting to share information. Like, everyone who collects toys, I feel like they have an innate desire to eventually take the step further and make something for themselves. Like, whether it's an original idea or a riff on something they collect, like, I think it's a natural progression for people to want to make stuff. And for me, it was like, I'm drawing every day. I have these characters that are reappearing. It's like, I really wanted to make a toy in Japan because I'm collecting that stuff primarily. But back then, it was like maybe two American guys who are out there facilitating for other Americans who are busy or who had other jobs, and toy making wasn't their main source of income. So it was like, I had an idea, and my first figure was actually like a resin thing that I wanted to then make into soft vinyl, where it was like, I'll do a resin tester, see if anyone cares about it, and then put that money into soft vinyl somehow. Like, I'll figure out a way. But the toy sold out. I did like 20 or 30 of them or something like that. But the people who were willing to share information or insight, basically what I had made wouldn't work in soft vinyl, whether it was the jointing or the undercuts or the size of certain pieces. So I was kind of like, it didn't take the steam out of my sails, but I was like, oh, I'll just move on from this, like, do something else. And it wasn't until maybe a year after that, my friend Chad, who runs Monster Warship Toys, who's done stuff with Johnny Ryan and Jeff Lamb and Coop and stuff like that, he had reached out and was kind of just like already established in the world and had his relationships out there, and was like, do you want to do a toy? I'll front everything. You'll get a handful of toys of every run, and then once the costs are paid off, like, we'll just go from there. So it was kind of like, coming from a band who had been on record labels and releasing like vinyl LPs, it seemed very similar to like the punk rock ethos of like, we're in this together. If it doesn't make any money, we'll cut our losses. But if it clears that threshold, then we'll just go on and do that. So, just very fortunate that Chad liked my art and reached out to do that. And that kind of from there snowballed out of control with like where I am today.
Out of control. I mean, what's cool about the reality is, so we do that with artists now, and it's cool to see that like that has been going on forever, where people will just step up and say like, you make cool stuff, we'll front all costs, don't worry about it. It's awesome to see that lineage of people, and what my hope is that it's because we see something in those artists rather than we see that we can make a quick buck.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, I would hope in any aspect of business or relationship in the world, like a working partnership is just like, this is a whole other can of worms. I'm sure we'll talk about it down the line, but it's just like, you meet these people first, realize they're cool. You can sit down and have dinner with them, have a conversation, grab a beer or whatever. And it's just like, you want to work with them, not like, oh, this dude has a million followers. If I throw a toy of his on my company, then we're going to go viral or whatever. It's like, if you can't sit and chill with someone and have a real conversation, like, there's kind of no point in working with someone, in my opinion.
I feel like you're describing, even at a greater level, like shows and conventions and stuff. One of my favorite things is at the end of the night, we just did it at a show a couple weekends ago where it was like, we just grabbed like a hodgepodge of artists that we like to hang out with and went and had dinner together and laughed around a table and ate together and that was the most rad thing. And I think you see it when, like, you do SummerSlam. Like, the interaction 100%. Between all of you is insane. Yeah. Which we're going to get to how you got into that ragtag group. Yeah, I'm pumped to talk about that because I love Kwong. So you get this from him. What's the, does he like instruct you on what your first toy is going to be then? And then you are like, oh, how do I sculpt it so it works?
Kind of. For better or for worse, he kind of just let me do what I want. And the only stipulation was, because it was my first toy, it was going to be 2 points of articulation.
Yeah.
Relatively small. It was the slime bat. Like, he just has a movable head and the body is stationary. So it's like he was willing to go that far. And as long as I was within those parameters, it was ready to go. Like, he had sculptors that he had worked with previously who were going to work on it. So it was just like, I sent him the worst turnarounds I've probably ever drawn in my life, and he made it happen. But in hindsight, I shouldn't have given him, like, he has 7 eyeballs and a zillion teeth and all this stuff where it's like, it's a nightmare to paint. Like, it just takes a lot of patience, but I'm happy he was just like, all right, like, do whatever you want and we'll make sure the rest works out.
Yeah. Back then, I mean, I've only been doing this for maybe a couple of years now. When you're doing this, if you don't have anyone that sculpts and someone else, like, you work with the factory to sculpt it out, do you just kind of send them like the rough sketches and they keep sending you pictures back?
Yeah. For the most part, like, I'm trying to think. I've worked with a handful of different sculptors, some friends, some just companies or factories, and it's just like, at this point, I have a language in my toys where I can show them, like, this is what my stuff looks like now. Mm. Here's the drawing. Like, you can lift some of these elements from here and there. But, like, it's basically just I try my best to get the forms and volumes how I want them to look from all sides. And then I've been very fortunate enough to work with sculptors who know what they're doing and what's possible within the soft vinyl form, where it's like, they'll take some of the angles and shave it down or make them less extreme. And just like, whenever I get images back, it's very infrequent that I have to send back like red line edits where it's just like, oh, that looks great. Let's maybe make the eyes a little more bulbous, or this slime here can go away or whatever. But I don't really have a lot of issues with that, just in terms of like how I want it to look, the things I collect, and like how I want it to exist in my world.
Yeah. I mean, at this point too, I do have to ask about timeline, because we can get a toy down to like 6 months or 7 months if we have everything in line.
Yeah.
But I've heard tale of working with Japan and it's like 2 years sometimes in the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Is that what happened? Like,
basically, I know there's like one of the bottlenecks in the Japanese production line is like the mold making process, like the metal molds, because they're at a time like people were dying and that art was getting lost and they weren't passing it down, or like factories were closing and the larger factories were absorbing their workers. So it was like, for whatever it was worth, there was 3 or 4 mold making factories and they were just working with the big wigs of Bandai or Metacom and all that. So it was like, for an independent toy maker, it was harder to get in to where someone had an opening.
Yeah.
But now I think like more factories are opening up, or they're growing in space and just have more availability. But even still, it's kind of like, you throw a bunch of plates in the air and spin them around and like,
yeah,
maybe a thing you submitted 6 months ago will be ready, or maybe something you did 2 years ago will get lost at the wax process or the joint making process, and then it'll just show up out of nowhere. But yeah, it's kind of just like you pray that it'll come out within a year or something like that.
Yeah, which is, that's so crazy. The early on just sounds like the Wild West, where it was like lack of communication. If it got lost, it got lost. If it did this, it did this. And I don't know about you, my brain just doesn't function that way. And so luckily, like the factories we work with now, it's just, it's constant of like, here's a picture of this. Here's how far we are in this process.
No, it's really nice. Like early on when I was doing stuff with Monster Worship, it was just like, oh, we put in this order. Who knows when it's going to be ready? But like that was fine because I wasn't paying for it. But then the toy company called Gums Production reached out to me. They had done, I think they like started doing like store displays and fiberglass stuff. And the main guy, Benny, he wanted to get into soft vinyl style production out in Hong Kong. And he asked me to be kind of like one of the first people he worked with just to see if his factory was up to snuff. And I jumped at the opportunity and seeing how his factory worked with the sculpting and communication and all that and timelines. I think it was 3 or 4 months when I had something from like inception to a toy on my doorstep.
That's insane.
Yeah, it was eye-opening where it was just like, oh, I love Japan. I love Japanese toys. This factory is doing a similar thing. It looks just as cool, but it's faster and just like not more convenient, just different. So it was like eye-opening to then be like, oh, I can go to Mexico and this guy's making toys down here. I'll send him a sculpt and all that. And it's just like when the delays in Japan were pretty long and just you don't know when it's going to show up. It would just be like, I'll do something in China, I'll do something in Mexico and something in Japan and have kind of like a variation of stuff coming out like whenever it's ready.
Insanity. You get this first toy made and it ships and it gets to you in hand. What's that feeling like? Because you went from collecting all this cool stuff to now having what you made.
Yeah. I mean, that's insane. Like, something in your head just being a 3D object that can exist in this collection of stuff that I'm sure a lot of people can attest to. Like, you spend a lot of time searching and researching and learning and all that. So it's just like to be a part of the conversation, like, of toys in general, like, is a very cool feeling.
Yeah. I mean, we also have to get to, like, 'cause this starts everything, which is all under the name Draculaser. How'd we settle on Draculaser?
I honestly don't have a cool story. It's just, I've like grown up, my dad loves Dracula. He loves Universal Monsters and all that. But like, I've always been a vampire guy, like Blade, Underworld, like as a 90s kid, like vampires were cool. They're everywhere from Dusk Till Dawn, all that stuff. And, I liked lasers and I just thought the two words went well together and it was the first and only Instagram name I've ever had and kind of just built a universe around that.
I mean, some of the best names come from not having a cool story behind it, so I'm here for it. Yeah. You make this kind of starts you on a lineage of making toys nonstop, and that's probably around 2013, 2014.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, I did the first 5 points in New York with my friend Johan, who does Death Cat Toys. Mm-hmm. And I had a few slime bats, and I had my alien laser, the big guy that was made in Hong Kong by Gums Production. And it was at that show when I sold everything. I didn't have a ton, but I sold out of everything. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, oh, like,
this is real.
This is real. There's interest. Like, someone besides my friends care about this. And, it was Not, I don't even know. Like, I'm still not, I don't claim I make toys full time now just because I do so many other things, but the world of doing shows and making toys frequently kind of started at that first 5 points. That was probably like 2014 or 2015. I can't remember when that was. But it was also at that same show that I met Brandon and Kwong before Creature Bazaar was like a real thing. But they were just doing decon out in LA, and then they'd come out to 5 points just to like sell stuff. And yeah, I met them, and kind of the rest was history from there.
Was that your first show that you did?
Yes.
So
Yeah, that was my first show.
that's, I mean, to have a first show that you're flying out to, correct?
I was living in New York at the time,
Okay,
so
okay.
it was easy, kind of just like, oh, my friend Johan wanted to do this. He invited me along for the ride, and I was like, yeah, sure, I'll go up. And then it
Yeah.
was kind of just like, yeah, that was it.
This is going to sound so stupid, but flying out to a show to table is like the next big thing for me because I can't functionally think, how do you get your toys there?
Oh, it's so I was basically, I lived in New York for 12 years or so, moved out here to Long Beach almost 2 years ago. But after 5 points and meeting Brandon and Kwong, I would maybe fly out here 4 times a year for Monsterpalooza, DCon, Son of Monsterpalooza, and then later SummerSlam and all that. But it was just like,
Jeez.
I would get the toys mailed to me in New York. I didn't have a painting set up there just because my girlfriend and I, we shared an art studio and all the paint's toxic. Didn't have proper ventilation and all that. So I would get the toys in New York, cut and assemble them, throw them in my suitcase, fly over a couple days early, stay with Brandon or Kwong, paint as many as toys as I could, and then hope that they sell, and then fly back after a weekend and wait for the
Dude,
next show. And then
that's so rad.
yeah, it was a lot of work. I usually got sick after every show just because I was staying up and not
Yeah.
resting well. But
Huffing
then
fumes and stuff.
exactly, yeah, just
Yeah. The
everything
thing
bad for you.
that like I miss most, I mean you did the transition from Japanese to Chinese factory. And the thing that I miss most is I not even from a Japanese factory, from someone that was here cutting the flash, and like that was a process that it seemed tedious, but I loved doing it.
Oh yeah, no,
And
it's like
now
it's
the
annoying, but
factory
it's
sent
fun.
me a full like painted done toy, and it's like, well, all right.
Yeah, I feel they're like, because I have diversified all my factories and stuff, like now even like beyond Hong Kong, I've worked with like a different Chinese factory where it was like my big mascot character. It kind of looks like a tabletop display, and I designed it in mind knowing that I was going to hate painting it because it's masked. Everything is like very precise. And I went with this factory who would just do everything start to finish to my specifications. So like getting a toy how I envisioned it and not having to toil over spending hours painting a single toy is just like, oh, this is sick. Like, I can charge less. I'm
Yeah.
not spending as much time. It's just like, that's really fun. But then, like, as you said, like sitting down to watch a movie, cutting all the flash, assembling it, like, I like that in not small amounts, but I like being able to not have to do that when I decide not to.
Yeah, just it's almost like it's something I can go back to if I ever want to just participate in that
Oh,
craziness.
yeah.
You meet Kwong at this at 5 points, which you guys are now like a that tight group that exists under Creature Bazaar or as they do SummerSlam. And so,
Yeah.
tell me, I mean, you meet him there, you do 5 points. What's the trajectory that you go on from that point to now be invested in that group and be doing this more?
I mean, it was just like when I started making toys, I was young at the time compared to who else was making toys. So I don't want to say like I wasn't taken seriously, but I wasn't a part of like the OG, like American toy makers. Like I didn't have an airbrush, so I wasn't customizing toys early on. I was just like enjoying it and wanting to do it. And I met Johan and worked with him. He lived in Virginia at the time, so I could take the bus down and like stay at his house. We would just chill and play video games and paint toys, which was really fun. And then meeting Kwong and Brandon and Justin Ishmael, who works with them and doing his own stuff. They basically, Kwong was like, "We do decon out in LA. Like, if you ever want to go out, just chill at our table. Like, you don't have to pay for anything. Just see if you like it." And I kind of just like threw it in the back of my head, like, "Oh, there's no way I can do this. I don't have enough product. Like, decon is huge." It was kind of like daunting to me, kind of scary. And 1 year, I don't remember the first year I went out to decon. I think it was the first year when it moved to Anaheim. I went out, I was going to stay with a friend, and there was like some wildfires happening, and that fell through. And I had my plane ticket already booked, and I just hit up Kwong. I was like, "Yo, I'm going to sell toys. Can I stay at your house?" He's like, "Yeah, no problem." So it kind of just started from there. Like, I slept on the floor in his like library room with all these comics and stuff, and sold some toys and just met everyone they work with, basically. So it was from then on, they continued to invite me out. They did the next 5 points that happened to be in Greenpoint, because it moved from Chinatown to Greenpoint. And yeah, we just chilled. Like, if they would come out for New York Comic Con for like the Puss Head events and stuff like that, and we just like get dinner and chill. And kind of from there, just yeah, the friendship blossomed, and SummerSlam happened. And just basically their generosity with letting me crash with them, picking me up from the airport, being at their tables was just like they're very generous and just brought me into the fold of everything. And yeah, I'm happy to work with them and be friends with them.
Which is so rad. I mean, we're now at this point, let's say 10 years in of making toys nonstop. What has kind of changed through your process? Has this kind of like really poured? Have you recognized your style more? What has kind of been the thorough pull?
It's basically just been like my thought process, and everything that I do is just like I need to be making something just to like get it out of my head. It's usually an idea that reappears in my sketchbooks if I'm drawing every day or making paintings or whatever. It's just like, oh, this will be cool to make whatever. If it's a song or a drawing or a toy or whatever, and it's like I'm kind of pigeonholed into what I collect in terms of Japanese toys, and like there's a language that I really like, and I want to make toys that exist in that world. So it's kind of just a very weird cyclical amalgamation of everything, and it's kind of just, yeah, it's just my brain in 3D form. Like, yeah.
One of the things I've seen in your progression of toy making that has been so fun is like we've gone from these articulated, like full figures to finger puppets and stuff, and which I'm so new to that side of making toys. Like, we just produced a claw keychain. And I didn't know that you could do that kind of stuff. I didn't know that that stuff was real. So tell me about these little progressions where you just start making little things that go on fingers. And I think you've made the foot recently, which I really want to talk about.
So basically, I don't want to sound jaded, but like in vintage toy world, like the market's insane. It's truly unhinged. Like, I don't know if you saw the Mark K auctions recently where multiple thousands of dollars. And like, that's great. And these things are legendary. But when I started buying and collecting vintage toys, they were expensive for me, like freshly out of school or whatever. But like, they were still affordable. And I can think back to my first trip in Japan, seeing these things that were expensive then, but now sell for 10 times the price that it was. And I'm lucky enough to have been collecting for a while and have a lot of stuff that I wanted back then and was able to buy later in life. But the finger puppets, it's like you can go into a gas station or a convenience store and it's $3, like a character that I like.
Yeah.
And it's fun. I get to open it. There's no fuss. It looks like the thing that I want and it's cool. And I kind of wanted to make something to be in that realm of, if you want a toy from me and you don't want to spend $90 or $100 or $200, it's like you can get a little thing that's $30 or you can get the whole set that'll be whatever price. But the more and more I go to Japan and I don't want to spend thousands of dollars on a single toy, it's like, oh, I can get these cool minis. They fit in my pocket or my carry-on. And like, I have a little army of like characters that I like. And you can go back in history. There are these vending machines called Cosmos, and they're kind of like bootleg toys and gag gifts and all that. And like, just to touch back on the foot that I made, it's based on a Cosmos toy that is like a micro, it's like half an inch. It's a severed foot with the worst paint job ever. And it's got like a little spring on the bottom, so it hops like a ghost foot or something. I was like, oh, this would be really sick. Like, I have one. I maybe paid $20 for it in Japan. I was like, I want to make a big foot that just looks weird and kind of go from there. And like, a lot of times you'll see like Paul Kaiju will have a finger puppet, like an omake, a freebie with his figure, because when you're making toys in Japan, there'll be a little bit of real estate on the mold. It's like, oh, there's space for one more thing that won't go on the toy. And it's like, you pour it, you're paying the same price for the vinyl and making the molds and all that. And it's, you might as well just have a little freebie. So for someone like me to make a set of finger puppets, it's kind of, it's truly a passion project because it's not very cost effective. It's relatively expensive to make a mold of just non-articulated single color things, but it's the stuff that I like to collect and just something that I wanted to do. Again, like, I would draw all these characters and I'm happy they exist. And now I have like 600 random vinyl color toys that I've cut over these months, and I have just random colors I need to paint. It's kind of a overwhelming task, but I think,
600 is wild.
Yeah. I like, because I wanted it very specifically, like this first master set that I'm releasing, it's like, I wanted a pinky skin color. I wanted the octopus to be red, the skull and ghost to be white. So I had the figures on a single mold. So it's like, I need to order 30 or 40 pulls in red. So now I have like a red ghost, a red foot, a red skull, and the list goes on and on. But I'm going to do it to where like in-person shows, it'll be kind of like a blind box thing where you just reach into a bag and get what you get. And it'll be like a random weirdo color. But the first release will be like the thing that needs to look like the thing.
Yeah. So, which it's, I love the balance between, one, that you found it as a bootleg toy in this like machine. So behind me are like bootleg Ninja Turtle toys from all over the world. I'm hooked on it. It's stupid. And no, so
I fully understand, like, the bootleg toy as an art form is one of the best.
Yeah, I've just never seen anything like it in my life where
these artists, it's really just normal people, not even artists, that are like told, hey, paint the teeth. And instead of painting the teeth, they just throw white paint on it. Mm-hmm. And then dumb people like me are like, that's perfect. I need six of them for my wall.
Oh, yeah.
And so one of my dreams is to take one of those toys and redo it, because I'm not going to get in trouble from anyone.
Oh, yeah. No way. That's free range.
Right. And so you're doing something that I dream about, which is phenomenal. But one of the things that's cool, too, is that you upsized the foot one. Mm-hmm. And I just am so drawn to how unique that is, because it is so weird. And I think that that's what speaks to, at least since I've been in this like soft vinyl world, like weird speaks to what soft vinyl and Sufubi is.
Yeah, I think that's what draws most people in. Like, mm-hmm. not growing up in Japan, you're not familiar with a character that's an ear holding a giant Q-tip spear, or a hand with legs and an eyeball on one of the fingers. Like, it's very strange, and you want to learn more. And then you find out, like, oh, I saw Power Rangers when I was a kid. Some of these crossover, or this video company produced this, this, and this. And then you can just go off from there. But it's like, at least for me, in terms of research and like the nerdier aspects, like, you can find something new that you've never seen if you dig hard and just spend time with what you're trying to learn. Which I think is really cool.
I mean, being in this for so long and now tabling at all these different places, and do you find that right now, I have to ask this question, because like, you talk to people like Mark Nagata just released a video that he's retiring. Mm-hmm. You talk to Paul Kaiju, who's been doing this for so long, that you're like, hey, man, are you winding down? Like, is this... And so you've been in this long. What's next for Draculaser as we go forward?
I have so many ideas that I want to do.
Yeah.
Original characters, licensed characters. The more that I'm doing stuff and collaborating with companies like Unbox Industries, I'm fortunate enough just to meet people who have opportunities to expand and just do mm-hmm. something else. But, for the personal, like, Draculaser brand, with the toys that I've been making at this like mid-size, you could call it, like, in the Japanese toy world, I want to take the characters that I have now that I've made and do like standard size figures of each one, and kind of work my way backwards mm-hmm. and do just larger scale stuff, which I've done randomly, but not of any specific characters that I've created. So I think next year, maybe the tail end of this year, like, I'll start that undertaking. But it'll be a long journey, but as long as I've got characters in my own head to pull from, it should be all right.
What shows are you doing this year?
Let's see. I'm going to do Super Festival in Japan, mm-hmm. which is April, end of April. And then the Summer Decon that got announced not too long ago, I'll be there with the guys. Summer Slime, Monster Palooza, which I think is before Summer Decon. And then Creature Bazaar, will be doing an event in the Mandarake Coco store in mm-hmm. Akihabara again this year. The same as our last year show, where we took over the shop with a bunch mm-hmm. of friends. And then after that, I believe I'm going to be doing a solo art show in Nagoya, Japan, at Madbox, where I've shown some stuff before, in the fall. And then after that will be Vegas Decon.
Heck yeah.
So it's a lot to work on, but...
I mean, and you're traveling all, like, constantly, what it seems like. And so mm-hmm. is this all toy related, or we're just out traveling the world?
So I also make music solo. I do like electronic music, kind of ambient, evil horror soundtrack style stuff. So I traveled quite a bit for that. I just got back from Europe on Tuesday, so I was like up at 4 in the morning this morning. I'm still jet lagged, but
Yeah.
it was good. But yeah, I just nonstop traveling.
Wait,
Yeah.
tell me about the we didn't even get into tell me about this ambient horror. The only so if, let me preface this before you have you seen the movie Forgetting Sarah Marshall? When he just plays the ambient music on like a cop show. That's the only like connection I have here. So please tell me this is different.
That's a good reference point, but a better reference point would be like John Carpenter movie soundtracks or something like
Oh,
that.
okay.
So like in that world, like corny old synthesizers and weird sounds, but there's a world of music called Dungeon Synth, and it's kind of like fantasy
Oh, yeah.
ambient music. And I have a project that's kind of not medieval or like happy sounding. It's just like very spooky and weird. And so
Yeah.
yeah, I was out in Europe doing that for a couple weeks. And yeah, I'm gonna play in San Luis Obispo at the end of March and Maine in the fall. But yeah, it's just like a another outlet for making art and stuff like that.
That's rad. I absolutely love when artists do stuff that you just never would expect. And I mean, yeah, I'm so glad that you were okay with that reference because the only line I remember from that movie is he goes, we got to catch the dog catcher. Bow, bow. That's crazy to be doing that kind of art form, then be so busy painting and doing all that stuff. And then those worlds like seemingly don't mix outside of that, but they do for you because art just flows through you, it seems. And so it's incredible to watch this. So I'm pumped because I'll be at most of those shows tabling, so I'm gonna come say hi and pick up 6 or 7 of those feet because they're bonkers and I
Get
want them on
one
my
for each
fingers.
finger.
Yeah, that's the point. That's a, like when, you can't make a finger toy and then tell me that I don't need 10 of them. That's the real thing. So, yeah, that's what it is. Dude, it's been such a pleasure having you on Toys on Tap. The
Well,
last
thanks for having
part
me.
of the episode is just about you plugging where people can get your art, where they're going to see you, all those things. So please plug away.
Best form of communication or knowing what's going on is just my Instagram, which is Draculaser. I post what shows I'm going to be at or when stuff's going on the website or if Creature Bazaar has leftovers. So if I'm not doing it myself, then it's going through Creature Bazaar. Draculaser.com is the website. And yeah, I'm fairly online. It's overwhelming sometimes, but I'm there. I try my best to respond to DMs and all that, but yeah, that's pretty much it.
Heck yeah. Dude, thank you again for coming on Toys on
Yeah,
Tap.
of course. Thanks for having me.